Hey guys, and welcome to this week's episode of It's a Definite Maybe, a podcast for those of you who are just trying to figure it all out, with your favorite co-hosts, as always, Stella and Rosie. On today's episode, we are joined by an extra special guest, Matilda Gilfillan. She is an Adelaide-based mindset and career coach, helping individuals making their shift into their next role and helping them really feel fulfilled in what they're doing. Matilda, welcome to the podcast!
Yay!
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 We're very excited to have you. With every guest, and you are no exception, we always love to dive straight into the deep end with some fun questions. So we'll start it easy. Why don't you tell us and our listeners a little bit about who you are? But of course, you guys have to stick around for the tea because we're going to spill all of it in this episode.
Amazing. So you touched on a little bit about what I do. So I call myself, you know, your next career move coach. So whether that be someone looking for a new role or a promotion or maybe starting a side business, I'm your gal. So I'm an ex-recruiter, LinkedIn strategist, resume writer, psychology graduate, nature lover, professional
development. She does it all.
All of the things. But yeah, that's sort of a very mean in a nutshell kind of overview. Mm. But yeah, your next career move coach, I guess, really encapsulates what I do.
I love that. I love people who have a really catchy, I guess, title or something. I think that's so fun.
The kind of tagline.
It's like a little elevator pitch, you know, you've got to have the spiel ready to go.
Yeah,
totally. 10 seconds.
Exactly.
And what's a fun fact that not many people know about you that might surprise our listeners?
The dreaded fun fact. I grew up in the country, so I grew up on a very isolated farm on the coast of Kangaroo Island. So if your listeners have heard of Kangaroo Island, bonus points if they've been there, even better. But yeah, I'm a country gal, which a lot of people do find it hard to believe when they meet me because I've been living in the city of Adelaide for quite a few years now. So best of both worlds, country and city.
Oh, it's good to have some variety in your upbringing and, you know, what you're used to, I guess.
Almost definitely.
Oh, it's been the best. Like, you know, try and get over there. Like every now and then when, you know, you're just getting sick of routine and going back to KI, it's really my happy place. You know, Easters and long weekends and very close with my family. So try and go back, you know, as much as I can. Try not to take the car over because it is very expensive. So, but no, very special.
Beautiful. All righty. Well, we might get into the nitty-gritty of the episode in that case. So to start out, we'll kind of go back to the beginning a little bit. So in previous calls with you, you mentioned that you studied psychology, but you've ended up in recruitment. So how did you realize that psychology wasn't so much the path that you wanted to go down?
Yeah, it's a kind of a funny one. Psych is one of those degrees that you don't really fully understand or grasp the commitment of doing of what it takes to become a psychologist. And I think I don't know if being a psychologist was ever the dream job for me, to be honest. It was just you finished school, gap year, felt the pressure to study something, really enjoyed psych, you know, was that totally. Person in the friendship group that people came to and talked to and, you know, being a really good listener naturally kind of fell into that place within, you know, my group of friends and enjoyed it as a subject at school without actually thinking, what am I going to do with this degree? It was more like, I've got to study something. Why not it be psychology? Mm. And it's also one of those degrees that you don't get much hands-on real-world experience. It's very, like, theory-orientated for obvious reasons. So I kind of went about the degree not thinking too much about beyond the degree, and then it got towards the end of my honours year and I kind of just wanted to run away, and that's what I did. I went back to KI and took a bit of time off and myself, I'll take some time off before I go back and do masters, because you end up doing like 6 or 7 years of study. It's a big commitment. And
it's so much study.
It's like you may as well become a doctor and do medicine. And I think, to be honest, I probably was never going to go down the path and be a psychologist, but luckily it has taught me a lot of foundational skills and I made some incredible friends and it put me on randomly on the path towards recruitment, which is just a whole other thing, which I'll and I'm doing. You know, I didn't need to study psychology to do recruitment, but through, you know, connections and someone putting a post on Facebook about looking for a recruiter, I was like, no idea what this recruitment thing is. I need a job. It was at a point where I'd been on KI. It was time to move back to Adelaide and get a real job, you know, an office corporate job, and wound up in recruitment, which was a whole other, you know, roller coaster ride. So long story short, deep down, I don't think I ever fully thought I was going to be a psychologist, but it's the way of the world. I think, you know, we start on this path and there's so many unexpected turns and there's always something to learn from those bumps in the road, and not necessarily a bump in the road, but I did pick up a lot of skills and, yeah, things that have helped me in each of my corporate jobs.
What I find really interesting with that is that I feel like a lot of us, myself included, went down the very traditional path of high school, uni, get a job. And I think a lot of us feel almost maybe stuck or trapped sometimes in a path that we've chosen because we've spent so much time studying, we've dedicated a lot of energy, resources, money, whatever. How do people react to you, or how do you feel advice that you would give when you're like, yeah, I realize that I studied this thing, but that was not right for me? And think of it as a positive thing and maybe not as a waste. Because I know some people can think, oh, I spent so long, I don't know, studying to become a lawyer. Why would I now completely pivot and change careers? Like, that's such a scary thing for people. But you seem so happy and confident with that. I'd love to hear a bit more about that.
Yeah, I think you're so right. Like, there's almost this expectation of like step one, school, step two, study, step three, get a job. And that's, and I think that's just the pattern that I had fallen into.
Totally.
At the time, I think my parents were a little bit, maybe a little bit surprised, but not even like, mum even said like a couple of years ago, like, would you go back and do your master's? And I said, I don't think I would ever. And I think she is a little bit, she sees it like you put in 4 years of your life, and honors was really, it was a grind. Like, it was one of the hardest years, like, mentally to.
It's not easy.
It was really, really challenging. And I pushed myself and I was so proud of what I did in that year. And that of it in and of itself was enough for me. Like, oh my God, I did that. Amazing. I don't need to go on and do another 2 years towards a career that I don't even know if I want. So I guess the reaction is, I don't think people really understand the how psych does work in terms of the path. Like, they think it's like most other you do your 3 years and then you're a psych. And so, and some people do think I'm a psychologist, like friends and family, they think I'm a psych, and I'm like, I'm not a psych. I'm so far from it. Like, I do, I'm listen and I'm and like empathetic and all of those things, but yeah, I do have to remind people sometimes I'm not actually a psychologist. I know I did 4 years study. So yeah, I think looking back, mum, like, dad didn't even go to uni. So I think he was just happy and proud that I went. Mum was more so like,
right,
4 years, why wouldn't you just do another 2 years?
Yeah.
Everyone's kind of like, I think everyone's so like busy with their own stuff that they're like, you do you, like, whatever that looks like is like whatever that looks like for you.
I love that. We are always here for supporting people for doing what they want, which I think is like the perfect segue. I don't think I could have written a better segue into kind of what you do now and as a coach, which I feel like for at least myself being in the LinkedIn world and sort of being exposed more to recruitment and coaching as a lot more regularly than maybe people in regular corporate. To me, I'm like, yeah, they are a natural transition. There's a lot of overlap in skills, but how did you then, I guess, decide to make the switch, obviously, from psych to recruitment, but then becoming sort of more a coach, and you've recently left your full-time job and you're now doing your own thing. Talk us a little bit through that journey, that next evolution.
Yeah, totally. So I'll talk a little bit about recruitment because I think it is interesting, especially if you've got people who are listening that are in the corporate world, potentially looking at their next career move and what that might entail. So when I first started my first job in recruitment, huge global corporate business, agency recruitment, and anyone who works in recruitment, there's a really big difference between agency and internal. Agency is very fast paced. And I walked in, like, I'd been living on KI for a few years, had to buy some corporate clothes quickly, like, you know, makeup, hair. This was a whole new thing for me. I walked in and I literally felt like I literally walked in and felt like I was on the set of The Wolf of Wall Street. Everyone had these headsets in and I was like,
oh my God.
I felt like Alice in Wonderland. I'm like, where do I sit? It's like everyone sits
wow.
walls. It was such a shock to the system. And working long hours, like working at a computer, I'd been working at like wineries and on the farm and random, you know, jobs on KR. Mm. So that was a really big...
So different.
It was such an adjustment. And luckily I loved the job, like, to start off with, because it was very people-focused. So I could use my psych skills, you know. Mm. I could read people. I could interview. I could have a conversation, build the rapport, make them feel at ease. Because mm-hmm. interviewing,
yeah,
I forget being on the other side of it, but it is very daunting. It can induce a lot of anxiety. So... to have someone that's a little bit more calming, totally. A little bit more conversational, I think really helped. Mm. And then, so I was in that role for a little while and then just wanted a bit of a change. I thought 2020 was the year I was going to travel, find myself. I'd booked this sort of indefinite trip.
Didn't we all?
Famous last words, hey?
We all had plans for 2020 and I don't want to dwell on it, but that caused a huge spanner in the works in terms of my life. And I'd quit my job. I'd, you know, had plans for this trip. I had moved out of home. So I was at a real point of what the fuck am I doing? Like I had no goals, no direction, no plan. It was like I was in a rut. I was really stuck. And it took a while and a lot to get me out of that place. But the result of that was the idea of coaching and using my psych skills and my recruitment skills. So that's when that kind of started. And then at the time I also got into this role in internal recruitment, which was with an incredible company. They just really looked after their people. I learned the internal way of the world, which I loved as well. Started studying for mm-hmm. my life coach training, and I guess then started the juggle of balancing corporate and business and my kind of side passion and gig.
Yeah. That's a lot.
Yeah, it was. It was a lot.
I'm sure there's a lot of people who are in a similar sort of boat, whether it's they're already in that boat or they're just about to step onto it and they're kind of confused about how to go about balancing things and prioritizing. What did you find was particularly helpful for you balancing so many things at one time?
Yeah, such a good question. And I wish I knew the answer, and I still struggle with the balance. I think some things that helped me, because a lot of it was late nights and weekends and sacrificing things for the long term. And I think what was really important was that I knew my why behind I was doing that. Like I knew what my mission was. I knew what my purpose was. Mm. And I had a really clear intention for, okay, I know I'm at my computer and it's 8 o'clock and I'd rather be doing something else. However, like I also know why I'm doing this. I'm not just doing it for the sake of doing it. And so I think
not just
because I like staring at my computer, you know, 12 hours a day. So I think for people who want to successfully balance, I don't think that's the right term, but who want to do the balance, is to get really super clear on what is your why behind balancing these things and sacrificing things in the short term. And that can be in terms of like goals and getting, just really clear on your intention, I think is super important, because then it makes it easier to not come up with excuses and to actually stay committed and dedicated to what you've set out to do and what you're looking at doing bigger picture as well.
Yeah.
So how did you find your why? Like, was it an exercise that you consciously had to go through, or was it just something that you already knew?
I think part of it was like going back to the start of 2020 when I was in a very low point of just all of the things, not knowing what I wanted from life, feeling like I didn't have a purpose and that everyone around me had found their thing, but I had somehow missed out. And I think leading up to that point, I really gave up on that. Yes, I enjoyed recruitment, but I knew it wasn't my thing. I knew it wasn't my purpose. And I think I just had sort of given up on finding that thing. And then when coaching came about, I was like, everything, like it sounds so corny, but it just clicked. Like, it was just like, this is my thing. Like, I can bring the recruitment skills.
That light bulb moment.
Light bulb moment, 100%.
Yeah.
Having gone through, like, that muck and the shit and feeling like I was in the trenches, just getting to know myself on some deep level, which you do. Like, when you're going through a really shitty time, I know it's shit, but you're going to get to know yourself at such a deep level, know who you are, know what you're capable of. Oh,
totally. Yes.
And the light at the end of the tunnel was the coaching business coming to, like, that was birthed then, and that idea came about. So
I love that.
I would say my why is, like deeply grounded in having gone through the shit. I want to help women especially, but you know, clients in general, but women especially who feel lost, who feel stuck, who don't know what their next step is, who maybe experience imposter syndrome or are, you know, avid people pleasers, like your recent podcast, and give to everyone but themselves. And it's like, now is your time to step into your power. And careers just a small part of that. A lot of it is mindset as well, and just the general life. But if I can help with career, amazing, because kind of where my expertise lies as well.
I feel empowered. I'm ready to go. Like, let's start. I could run a marathon right now.
Well, just quickly on the note of mindset, what are the traps that you've noticed people fall into when it comes to their mindset, and kind of easy shifts that people can implement in their own lives to get them, I don't know, on the path that they're after?
Yeah. To run a marathon, I guess.
Yeah, no, yeah, if that's what your goal is.
That's a good question. You know, one of the things I see so much, and just in general, is people waiting for the perfect time, or for people waiting until they feel ready. These things don't exist. Like, the perfect time doesn't exist. You're never going to feel ready. Like, it's never going to feel like the right time to do things. And so, like, with my clients, one of the key things I get them to do is, I even had a client last night, and it was our first call, and she's like, I just want to get my mindset right, and then I want to do the thing. And I said to her, this is a trap that we can tend to fall into. We think that we need to sort the mindset out, and then things are going to feel right and ready and perfect, and we'll go off and do the thing. But in actual fact, it's the reverse. Like, we take the action, you know, feel the fear, absolutely. Like, it's daunting, it's scary, it's overwhelming, but taking, like, even the smallest of actions, your mindset's going to catch up to that. And I do this, like, daily. Like, this morning I get a bit of social anxiety, and I've made the goal to do some more networking and get out from behind my desk and actually meet people. And so this morning went to a networking event, and, like, I was like, I really don't want to go. I said to my partner, like, I was brushing my teeth, I'm like, I really don't want to go. Like, I just want to stay in and not go. He's like, go, go, go.
Networking is scary.
Oh, and I did go, and it was the best thing. And looking back, I'm like, I can do this. Like, and I think Glennon Doyle, she says, like, we can do hard things, and we can do hard things. So
we can do hard things. I love that podcast.
So my biggest tip for people is to stop waiting to feel ready, to stop waiting for the perfect time. Work out what a small, like, don't try and fight off everything at once. What's the next step that you can take, and then just take it, and then let your mindset catch up. Otherwise, it's going to be waiting forever to take that first step.
Amazing. Again, I feel very inspired. This is great. I always find when we do these interviews or, like, chit chats, I just, like, this is like a free therapy session to me. I'm like, this is great. This is exactly what I needed to hear.
I'm not a psychologist, but if you're having the same effect,
I love that. I think what is really interesting as well is that, so you and I, backstory, I guess, for people that aren't the three of us on this call, is that you and I met on LinkedIn originally, and the listeners know I'm a LinkedIn diehard fan. Like, would sell my soul to LinkedIn, basically. And I know that you love it as well. But I think what's a fun common thing is sort of like that idea of there's never going to be the right timing. There's never going to be the perfect time to start posting or start LinkedIn or start your side hustle. Like, you kind of just have to send it and hope for the best, even if you fall flat. So was there a moment where you were like, you know what, YOLO, I just need to start LinkedIn and give it a try? Or was it sort of part of your path when you decided you wanted to do your own coaching business? Like, where did that journey begin for you, I guess, with personal branding and LinkedIn?
Yeah, awesome. And I love meeting like fellow LinkedIn lovers, because a lot of people, they don't get it, they don't understand it. They think it's like LinkedIn.
People don't get it.
Gray area for social media. I'm like, no, you've got to get on it. It's literally the best.
Yeah. For me, it's social for sure. It's just different.
It's different, exactly. And it's just like, yeah, trial and error, giving it a go and getting familiar with the platform. With LinkedIn, I used it out of necessity. So when I started in recruitment, they set me up on LinkedIn and said, you know, we do a lot of headhunting and this is a way that we recruit a lot of candidates and a lot of people. I'd never used it before, but it kind of felt, you know, somewhat alike to Facebook, and, you know, being the age that we are, I love social media. So I thought, great, I can get to go on LinkedIn during work. Like this sounds fun. And started to build my profile, and that was just like, we had a brief little training with someone, and I kind of just took to it quite quickly and was like, this is cool. It's like a professional Facebook, and it doesn't kind of have the crap that some other social medias can have. And it's very, like, I just felt it was quite uplifting. And, you know, I love food, but not every post was what someone was having for breakfast. It was like people going out and smashing their goals and, you know, getting new jobs and promotions and all of these things. So it started out as a tool of necessity of part of, you know, the job. And through building my network and my brand there, I then was approached for other jobs. You know, a recruiter naturally is going to have quite a good profile and be quite active and have quite a good personal brand. Well, the good recruiters do anyway. And so I kind of started to get approached for opportunities and got my second job in recruitment through LinkedIn, which was quite cool.
Amazing.
And then as I started my business, I just thought, in terms of my client, like, where are they hanging, my ideal client, where are they hanging out? Where are they spending time? Well, if they're in a job that they're feeling stuck and bored in, then, and they're in an open plan office, then chances are they're going to be scrolling LinkedIn, because it's kind of the only socially accepted social media at work. And so it just made sense from a business perspective to be on the platform and to be active, and started to market my business, signed up a couple of dream clients from LinkedIn, and I was like, wow, I've got to put more focus and energy and strategy into it. And like, the more I used it, the more I loved it. And I also came to understand that a lot of people didn't use LinkedIn, didn't see the benefit of it, especially business owners and job seekers. And so that sort of became part of my mission of like empowering job seekers and business owners with the tools and the information to be able to elevate their brand on LinkedIn, and to be able to use the platform, feel comfortable with it, feel confident to navigate it, and, you know, achieve some of their goals, whether it be to secure a new job or to sign more dream clients. So nowhere near an expert at LinkedIn, but I love it. And I just found that I had a lot of, I guess, expertise, especially from a recruiter's perspective, to share with other people. So that's kind of how that evolved.
And I feel like that's such a natural space, like recruitment, HR, and like that world, and LinkedIn is like a perfect pairing. It's like influencers on Instagram. It just makes sense. And I think, I mean, I'm again a diehard personal branding LinkedIn content fan. So I'm so deep in this world. For people that maybe aren't as much, or maybe want to learn a little bit more, can you share a little bit of maybe some inside scoop of what your strategy is with now using LinkedIn for your business, finding clients, sort of promoting yourself, and how you use it, maybe if it's different at all to how you were using it for recruitment, and maybe give us some tea?
Yeah, love to. But I feel like I'm the apprentice and you're the master, and I'm just giving tips, because your LinkedIn is so I feel
not
like
at all.
We should turn the question to you, but I guess I can share some of my insights.
That's for another day. Stella can interview me one day, and I'll just not shut up about LinkedIn.
That's another day. Yeah, I can come on here and interview you. So when it comes to LinkedIn, for me, it was a change from being recruiter to then business owner, because I was able to start to show more of who I actually am as a person rather than the company brand, because personal brand's different from the company that you work for and the company brand.
Yeah.
So I got to go, which felt really fun for me, because I got to go from not being able to post much about my business to being able to go like full ham on my business and who I am, and let the LinkedIn community know like a bit more about who I am beyond the surface and start to get like a little bit more vulnerable and a little bit more real, because those are the posts that people can connect with. They can't connect with, like, obviously there's a time and a place for me being polished and having really well constructed posts and doing the sales and marketing thing. There's definitely obviously a place for that, but people want to know who the human is behind the brand and the business and really get to know my backstory. Like, I find that
totally
when I talk about my journey and my struggles and get vulnerable and that side of things, that's the sort of content. I mean, we love stories, right? Like, that's the sort of content that people really
totally enjoy. People buy from people.
Yeah, people like people. People buy from people. So in terms of tips or insight with LinkedIn, we kind of do judge a book by its cover, and like that's why it is important for, you know, what's on your profile and what you're showing and who you're showing. Like, there's, I think Jeff Bezos says personal brand is, you know, what people say about you when you're not in the room. So it's your personal brand isn't exactly.
Yes, I love that quote so much.
It's so good. And it gives such a perspective, because it's not exactly who we are at our core, but it's like the version of ourselves that we present online, i.e. via LinkedIn. So that version of you is one we portrayed through, you know, your photo, your tagline, your about section. I think for job seekers especially, like, that about section and getting the experience on point is imperative. Like, I see so many crap about sections that are like written in third party, or like there's no feel, there's no humanness, there's no. I love to see like real and raw stuff on an about section, and I always say add a CTA, add a call to action, like give someone the next step if they want to connect, if they want to reach out, if they want to have a coffee. Like, don't kind of just leave them hanging, give them, invite them into the next step to connect with you essentially. And then networking, like networking is a whole other kettle of fish that, you know, we could go on and on in a different podcast about. But what I say to people is to just don't be afraid to just connect, like connect, build your network. The more eyes on you and who you are and your personal brand, the better. And that's like, I just fearlessly connect with people and build my network, because what's the worst can happen? Someone doesn't accept your connection. Like, okay, all good.
Not the end of the world.
Yeah, exactly. So be bold, take risks, send the connection, put up the post, toot your own horn, which I think is hard for us to do sometimes, but LinkedIn is a place to do that. So that's what I love encouraging clients to do as well, is to really like shout your achievements from the rooftop and post them all over LinkedIn. Like, that's the place that it's a welcoming space to do that.
It really is, for sure.
So as someone who's not so much into the personal branding side of things and may not be on social media that often, how do you even start when it comes to building a personal brand online and I guess offline as well?
Such a good question. So so you're asking for someone who's not online, who does want to get online and start with LinkedIn?
Or maybe they are online, but they're not necessarily super comfortable with using social media, but do want to build up a bit of a presence online and build their personal brand.
Yeah, great question. I guess it would depend on, you know, what your goals are. Is it growing a business? Is it finding a new job? Because there's definitely different ways that you can do that. Like, for job seekers, registering with the recruitment agencies, I know I'm kind of, you know, obviously quite biased there, but that's also another way that a lot of people aren't aware of that process. Like, some people think you have to pay for it as a candidate and aren't, you know, totally aware of the process. But like, having a recruiter represent you to clients is a really good way for you to build your brand, because if you work with the right recruiters that have the right connections and have the right opportunities, like, that could be the difference between you not getting the dream job and getting the dream job. So building relationships, I guess, you know, in person, networking, registering with recruiters. Yeah, I mean, I'm so ensconced in the online world that I can't imagine a life, you know, trying to build your personal brand not online, just given like how much time we all spend on social media and that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, like I said this morning, I went to an in-person networking event and it was very casual, you know, coffee, you know, 10 to 15 people, very, very small and intimate. And that was amazing. Like, I had all these follow requests on Instagram after that, and It's a
oh, wow.
vibe talking to people face-to-face as well, like given we are such a virtual mm-hmm. world, I think there is almost that deeper layer of trust that someone has when they meet someone face-to-face. And so
totally.
While it can be a little bit more daunting, you know, meeting in person, I think that can be a really powerful way to get your personal yeah. brand out there and to, you know, attract dream opportunities.
And to finish up, I guess, before we get into our kind of typical closing out section, what are some of the biggest mistakes or challenges that you see people come up against when building their personal brand? And what are some things people can do to kind of combat those as they come up?
Yeah, awesome. So mistakes and challenges with personal brand, I think a lot of people don't think that it relates to them, that it's not important. It's like, oh, well, you know, I just work for a company. I'm not a business owner. So why do I need to worry about my personal brand? And I think that's the first challenge and mistake people make mm-hmm. is that they don't think it relates to them. So they don't put much time and energy into it or even really think about what they want their personal brand to
yeah.
be. And I think also it can be challenging when you don't know who you are and what you stand for and your values and your attributes and what makes you unique. It can be difficult to then create an authentic personal brand. And I think some people then will put something out into the world that they think people want to see from them, what rather than who they actually are and what an aligned brand actually looks like. So yeah, I think not thinking that it is relevant and then putting out a version that's just unrelated from who someone actually is, I think they're probably the biggest challenges mm-hmm. and mistakes that people make.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of tips, look, I always come back, and this is probably one like an answer I have for a lot of things, but I think it comes back to clarity, like clarity on who you are and what you value, what your goals are,
totally.
What you bring to the table, what you bring to your role, to your business, what makes you unique, because we are all so unique to each other. You know, contrary to what people might think, there are certain things that set us aside and that's important to really highlight and showcase those things. So I think even before it even gets to online or LinkedIn or any of the social media, it's like taking it offline and getting a look, like some deep clarity on who you actually are. And I know it sounds funny because, you know, you could be thinking of someone in their 30s or their 40s or their 50s, but in actual fact, like, when do we ever get the chance to actually sit down and reflect on who we are and question some of the things that we might be doing that aren't in alignment to who we are? And that's what I love about coaching, is that it creates that space for the client to actually see, well, what's in alignment, what's not? Like, what is my purpose? What's my mission? What motivates me? What drives me? Because we're not really asked that at school. Mm-hmm. Like, we're kind of pushed into certain things, and depending on who our, you know, family and friendship circles are, we just may not be having those conversations. So allowing yourself the time and space to ask yourself the big, deep questions that can be confronting and challenging to do.
Yeah.
Forms such a strong foundation for you to launch and then, you know, do the personal brand.
Amazing. Well, that was some excellent advice, and I think the perfect note to finish up our episode with. You have given us so much, Matilda. Thank you for joining us. And as we finish with every guest, we want to know, what are your top three current recommendations? This could be TV shows, a book, a podcast, a recipe you've been loving, a hangout place. What are your top three for the moment?
Amazing. Top three. Well, I am a huge Hugh Van Kylenberg fan, so I would have to recommend his book, The Resilience Project. I read that while I was in my shitty time in 2020, and it just came at such a good time, and I started, you know, practicing gratitude and empathy and mindfulness and just found it so powerful. And I've loved everything he's done since. Like, his journals are incredible, the podcast, his live shows. So yeah, sorry, that's like three in one. So I'm going to say the book, The Resilience Project. what else am I recommending? I'm rewatching Downton Abbey at the moment, so I'm going to recommend Downton Abbey, even though it's a random one.
I've never seen it.
Oh my
God. I've never seen it either, but my mum loves that show.
My mum loves it too.
It's really good. Like, I've got my partner that's into funny. It as well. It's like, it just takes you back to like 1910, I think, is like 1910, 1920s. It's just Mm-hmm. Such a beautiful era. I love it. The outfits and just everything. Very, very cool. That's a random one. I've already just rewatching that at the moment. And then recipes. I like makeup. I never follow a recipe. One really easy recipe that everyone should know though is if you like pancakes, one banana, one egg, a couple of tablespoons of self-raising flour, healthy, simple, easy. I swear anyone can make it, and it makes like 3 medium-sized pancakes. So another random recommendation. Oh, but
I love that.
That is a great recommendation.
I love food.
I don't think anyone's actually given us a recipe before, so this is great.
Awesome. Well, yeah, they're my 3 recommendations. But thank you so much for having me and for all your incredible questions. Really, like, got me thinking and...
of course.
I love, what you guys do and the conversations that you bring to people. So thank you so much.
You're too nice.
Well, thank you for making the time to speak to us as well. Like, we really appreciate everything that you have taken us through this episode. And for people who do want to continue to connect with you on socials, where can people find you?
So LinkedIn, surprise, surprise, they can find me on LinkedIn, Matilda Gilfillan. And then I'm also really active on Instagram, and my handle is Matilda Rose Gilfillan. So LinkedIn, Instagram, so a couple of different options there depending on where you hang out.
Beautiful. And we'll put those links in the show notes as well, so anyone can jump straight in there and follow you directly there.
Amazing. Thanks so much.
Beautiful. Well, thank you, Matilda. Again, thank you, listeners, for joining us. That is all we have time for. Make sure you guys head over to Matilda's socials. As we said, we'll put it in the show notes and all of ours as well. If you guys aren't following us on socials or following Matilda, now is your time. And if there's any other conversation topics or guests that you want to have on the show, drop us an email or a DM.
Otherwise, thank you for listening. Make sure to rate, review, subscribe, and we'll see you another time when we talk about other areas of life that might not have a one-size-fits-all approach on It's a Definite Maybe. Bye.
Bye.